And then they saw me in a bra, and that was it.
What's going on, Pearl Jam nerds? You are listening to Single Podcast Theory, and I'm Brad Lyons.
And I am Brad Blazek.
So normally, I have no problem saying my name, but did I just make my last name into a question?
I think so. You forgot who you
and
were.
And I'm Brad Lyons?
Mm-hmm.
I am Brad Lyons, and you are Brad Blazek. And
yes.
If you've never listened to us before, we're a Pearl Jam podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But we're 127 episodes in, so sometimes we get lost in the woods a little bit, but we always come back to Pearl Jam.
It's always Pearl Jam adjacent.
Absolutely. It's kind of a, you know, 7 degrees of Pearl Jam, mm-hmm. as opposed to Kevin Bacon. Isn't that the name of it?
Right.
The game?
Isn't it 6 degrees?
6 degrees. Doesn't matter.
Something like that.
Yeah, no, it matters.
We all know.
We all know what I mean.
We all know what we're talking about.
Oh, God. I'm a host. No, we're not doing okay. that today. We're fucking putting our heads down, and mm-hmm. we're working through it, man. How you doing?
Good. How are you? How's your week? How's your day?
Really good. Been really busy, and that makes me happy most of the time. Got a radio show here in Birmingham and a podcast about music here in Alabama, actually. I don't think I've ever talked. Have I talked about that before here?
You might have mentioned it once or twice, but why don't you go ahead and give it a full plug?
Oh, I don't need to do that. But, yeah, I obviously live in Birmingham, Alabama, and we have really, really great music here. It's one of the great things about living in the South is that there's tons of great music all over the South, and it's actually I don't know, there's music that you easily associate with the South, even current stuff like, you know, Brittany Howard and the Shakes, or you know, John Paul White from the Civil Wars is here. Tons of history in Alabama as well for music, so it's kind of covering a lot of the new stuff that's going on right now, which I find really interesting because it's not an industry city. And that's really fun for me because everyone here makes the record they want to make, right? It's not like attached to any kind of like label type situation with maybe A&R people or management that like, well, this is really cool right now, so let's make it sound like this. It's people just make the records they want to make here. And there's really great hip hop here. There's really great soul music here. There's great blues music here. And there's tons of great like indie rock bands, a lot of pop stuff going on in Birmingham. It's kind of all over the place. And so that's what I spend a lot of my other time doing outside of this podcast is that and making records and all that kind of shit. So if you want to listen to it, it's called Local Mash. You can just type it in, same way you found us. But I understand if you want to do that, if you don't give a shit about the music that's happening in Alabama. I totally get it. But it is out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I have a lot of fun doing it.
Speaking of other podcasts, I was a guest.
I know. I got to listen. I still haven't been able to listen to it. Was it fun?
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, it was one of our listeners, Mark Radland.
Yeah.
He hit me up actually last year, and I was like, dude, it's almost Christmas. Like, get back to me like in the beginning of the year.
Right.
And he did, and we hooked up, and the name of that podcast is called On the Rocks Podcast. So
yeah,
we had a fun time talking about Pearl Jam and throwing you under the bus.
I bet.
And
did you enjoy that?
But it was fun. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah.
Oh God, I can't wait to hear it. I'll have to get myself on someone else's podcast to
yes
do like a response to the ways you and Mark shit on me while I wasn't around.
You're what are you a diss track? You need to do a Brad B diss track.
That's what it is, a diss podcast.
Yeah,
we're gonna have a diss podcast war.
Yeah. We'll just go on different people's podcasts every week.
And just talk shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But only about each other.
Right.
Hey, Brad Lyons, thanks so much for coming on my podcast. I had a couple questions. I'm really interested in if you remember, you know, and then some Pearl Jam question. And I'm like, here's the thing about Brad motherfucking Blazek. I hate his dumb face, I hate his dumb laugh, and I hate his dumb brain. You know what I mean? That's what I'll do.
Yes. Yeah.
Did I take it too far?
No.
Okay, cool.
No, you...
Well, I don't know if I did, because I haven't heard what you said about me yet. Right. It was sad about
That was nothing.
Oh, great.
That's a weak response to what me and Mark had to say about you.
Well, it's good to know, man. I never thought to think about you talking shit about me on another podcast, because I just didn't think you would do that. But I see what's going on.
I didn't either. But then when I was like on my own, and I didn't have you whispering in my ear,
right?
All these things started to come out.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like your first time away from your parents, your controlling parents. Right.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. I told him how you like you expect me to know how to do all these editing and producing things when I've never done it before.
Yeah, I expect a lot of that from you. Yeah.
Right. Yes.
Constantly riding your ass about the editing.
Yes. Yes. And how like I'm afraid to, you know, request any little drops because you just explode.
Yeah, you're like a little beaten puppy. Just the way I need you to be. That's been my plan the whole time. It's just, it's like Chinese water torture, you know? I'm just jabbing at you a little bit every time until I finally break you down.
Yeah. Yeah, we covered all kind of topics.
Yeah, we do. Should we move on into... Right. Well, we haven't even said. So this is episode 127.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about Live at Easy Street. Who was it that recommended that? It was last week in emails.
Yes.
I meant to look that up because I can't remember. See? That's one of my little digs right there. Exactly. Just call you out in front of everybody.
Right. Yeah.
Well, we'll have to look that information up.
I'm really sorry.
No, I feel bad because the funny thing is that I was like, "Oh, Brad Beal, remember?"
No, it's funny because I was like, "Oh, right when you said we're going to be listening to it, I was like, oh, I wish I knew who it was so I could shout him out right here." And then you come out and say, "Who was it that said that?" And I'm like, "Oh shit."
Let's see here.
Don't know.
Should we look? Okay, so it was Bob Remington.
It was.
Thank you, search function that Brad finds very, very fascinating. I think his world was changed today.
It really was.
You can search your emails, bro.
I thought you could only search like a name.
Like from someone's address kind of thing?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. Should maybe spend some time with a little bit of technology.
You could search like keywords. That's amazing.
Really? Are you putting me on right now? I'm dumb, Brad B.
No. Okay. I don't. a little bit of both. I never.
I love your honesty.
I never. Yeah.
50-50, 60-40.
Like, I just never thought to go into the search bar and be like, oh, I can type in something that somebody said in an email. The only time I've ever used a search function is to search, like, you know, someone's name.
Right. Oh, I get it, man. I mean, I kind of get it. I mean, what you're saying makes sense.
But then, like, just now when I was like, it hit me like a lightning bolt, no pun intended. Like, oh,
God.
Just punch in Live at Easy Street. And I bet, you know, the one or two people that have mentioned it, one of it'll come up and it'll be the most recent one. And that's exactly what happened. So
it's fucking fascinating.
Yeah.
All right. So maybe we should get back to whatever it is we're trying to accomplish today.
Yeah.
All right. So Live at Easy Street, that's what we're going to talk about today. But first, we're going to do some emails. If you would like to email the show, our email address is singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. You could say hey on social media. And if you would like to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. That's patreon.com for all of that information. This might be out of order, but since I just mentioned it, don't we have at least one new patron this week?
We do. We do. Christopher Principe. Principe.
Nice work on the name there. I appreciate
that. Is that how you say it?
I have no idea. Before? Yeah, I saw it. And the second I saw the name, I was like, well, this will be at least 30 seconds of the podcast talking about the pronunciation. and I just kind of left it there. But thanks so much, Christopher. We really appreciate you and everyone that chooses to support financially. It makes the show possible and makes things a lot easier for us. So we can't thank you enough. And we're going to have some new content soon for you guys.
Yes.
Yes. All right. So let's do some emails, man. Is it me first?
Tim it's Smith? You first.
Sweet. Yes. All right.
This is a cool one.
Yeah. He says, the name of the subject of the email is New Album Release Date Prediction from Tim Smith. Mm. Good day, Brads. I was listening to an old episode yesterday. Yes, when you say, what's up, PJ nerds? I am that nerd. And realized that you almost predicted the new album release date exactly last May. Have you mentioned this on the show recently? If so, I must have missed it, and I apologize, but I don't remember hearing you gloating about your Nostradamus abilities.
We have not.
No.
We have not gloated.
He says
yet, but we're going to.
Yeah, he even nailed it down for us. He says it was in episode 92, the Amongst the Waves episode, at around the 36-minute point of the show, and Brad B. predicted the release date to be the 13th of March. Pretty good guess, mate. Anyway, take it easy, Tim, from Newcastle, Australia. And we pulled the audio, man. Let's listen to Brad B.'s wisdom. It's probably the only time you'll ever hear me say that, so mark that down. JK, I love you, bro.
Oh, thanks, man.
But when do you think we're going to get a record? Let's just cut to the fucking chase.
Early next year.
Meaning, you're talking February, March? Are you talking April, yeah. May? What were you talking
about? Yeah, February, March.
That early?
I'm all calling right. It now.
All right, you want to call a month?
Mm-hmm.
How close do you want to try and get?
I'm. You know what? Speaking of 311, I'm going to go with March 11th.
What day of the week is that? March.
Okay. I don't know.
Come on, Brad.
I mean, Friday, come right? On, it's got to be a Friday. I should know. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
I should know when 311 day is every year.
Yes.
I'm going to call. It's going to be in March.
Okay.
And it's going to be March 13th, which is a Friday.
Now,
because that's when.
How about this? How about we. Okay. So you're saying March.
March 13th.
Okay. You're calling that day.
Yes.
Gotcha. Man, March 13th. I'm marking it on my calendar right now.
What do you think?
I have no idea. It's true. I didn't have any idea.
I love it. Yeah, that was May 19th, 2019.
If I remember correctly, I think I might have speculated that it would either be that early, like your prediction, or it would maybe be the next fall.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But we didn't know what tours were happening yet at that point, I don't think. I definitely didn't have a good guess for that one. Nice work, Brad B. Are you proud of yourself, man?
Oh, yes. Thank you. Very, very proud. If only 311 had named themselves 327.
Sorry, man. I just looked. I got this text message. I just totally just like stroked out because I just got a text message from Mike Bloomberg's campaign.
And it kind of
threw me. Sorry about that.
You need to take that.
No, sir.
That's very important.
Anyway, thanks, Tim. Appreciate it, man. Good to hear from you again. Who you got next, man?
Michael A. This is his first email. This is my first but won't be my last email to you guys. First off, I started listening to the podcast about a month ago and absolutely love what you guys do. I've been listening to Pearl Jam since 1991, and having a place now to nerd out and discuss tidbits, facts, etc. is fantastic, like a warm blanket of Pearl Jam geekdom. Great breakdown of Superblood Wolf Moon last week. I loved the song after hearing the first few chords, and your assessment of the lyrics and music and that fucking mind-blowing MacReady solo really felt good to dive into. And the 1-2 punch of Superblood and Dance really has me excited for what's to come ahead in March. We're in for a real treat. This week's question, I'm trying to learn Smile, Daughter, and State of Love and Trust on the bass. I haven't been able to find any decent resources to help with this. It was much easier to find Alive, Even Flow, etc. I know you guys are musical and play, so any help? Any listeners you know of that might be able to help? If you want to pass along my email to anyone you know that might be able to help, I'm cool with that. They can put SPT bass help in the subject. Thanks again for the hard work you put into this podcast. Listening on my commute to work is a real treat, and since I jumped in so late, I've got a whole archive to catch up on. Okay, rock on till the next, Michael.
Hell yeah, Michael. Yeah, I think Brad, you had actually brought up before as well. Might start looking at some more of Jeff's bass parts. I'm not, you know, by any means a professional bass player, but I can play bass, and I've been listening to Jeff obviously for most of my entire life. So that could be a fun thing to bring in the show as well, looking at the bass stuff. As far as places to learn those specific songs, man, if I'm in a bind and I need to look something up real quick like that, man, I just go straight to YouTube. And you might have to dig sometimes for some of the like deeper cut songs, like Smile. Daughter and State, I would think,
would be a little bit easier to find.
And the great thing about Smile bass is that that's Stone. And so he plays, I don't mean this in a bad way, he plays a little bit more like a guitar player that plays bass. Because there is a difference between a bass player and, yeah, if you're pretty good at guitar, you can pull bass off. But it's not like being a real bass player. So my point in that is like, Smile is just those basic chords. He's not, if I remember correctly, he's not, you know, moving away from the root of each chord very often, which is a good question. I shouldn't say that because I don't know if I've really sat down and paid attention to just the bass on Smile, because I feel like I'm always so concentrated on the fact that Jeff's playing some of the guitars and the lead. You know what I'm saying? I guess I haven't really thought about it that much, but yeah, definitely go into the recesses of YouTube. That's what I usually have to do. But maybe some more people will know more than I do and email some resources in. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, we'll pass them along.
Hell yeah. Thanks for writing in your first email, Michael. We appreciate it. Oh, man, one of the OGs. I love seeing this name pop back up.
Yeah.
We got an email from Richard Tremblay. Let's see here. Rich says, can't get enough of these new tracks for the subject. Dear Brads, it's been about 5 minutes. I last wrote into the show near the beginning when the top 10 episodes were dropping, but I've been constantly listening and felt a void in my life when the weekly episodes slowed to a snail's pace. Oh, it's okay, Blazik. Shit happens and work sucks.
Yeah, sorry.
You're building up steam again, and with the tour, new music hitting the waves, all is cranking in SPT land. That's true. I've said it before. I think you have too. Definitely kind of been re-energized by all the new stuff going on.
Yeah.
He says, I can't get enough of these new tracks. I'm playing them back to back over and over and over. So much I'm afraid that I'm going to hate them at some point. Nah. The boys are killing it musically, and Ed is fucking killing it with the lyrics and vocals. It's amazing how he can deliver a perfect performance in two different types of songs / feels. I love how the songs transition into each other. They're either in the same key or share some sort of theory in common. I'm a musician, but haven't actually sat down to figure it out. Or maybe this is a ploy to have Lyons pull out his guitar live on the show. Keep it up, B&B. You're killing it, too. Best regards, Rich. He phonetically...
Tremblay.
Tremblay. Bradby. From Atascadero, California / New Jersey.
I remember that... Atascadero, because that's where Terminator 2, that's where What's-Her-Face was locked up.
Oh, right.
But wow. I think that's not where it was.
I have no idea.
It sounds like that.
Well, thanks for writing in, Rich.
When she's...
What's that?
Moving on.
Oh, I didn't know. Did you have some... Sorry.
I was just saying.
We're having some latency today.
What's her name?
What's Linda Hamilton? Name?
Well, the act, the character.
Oh, the character. Oh, my God. Hold on.
I know, right?
Whoa.
Oh, I know what it is.
What?
You want me to tell you?
Yeah.
Sarah.
Sarah Connor.
She's locked up at I thought it was Atascadero, but I think it's something else. It sounds like that.
Interesting.
That's why. But the other thing is, I just listened to our No Code episode. I think we talked about this last week with Clint. And Richard had wrote in way back then, and we read his email. So when I saw his name come up this week, I'm like, oh, that's the same Richard from a year and a half ago.
Right. That's good to hear from you again, man. What do you got next?
This is Matthew Jones. He wrote in, he's talking about my son and Pearl Jam. That's what the subject is. What's up, fellas? My name is Matt Jones from Sacramento, California. I'm a chef who works his ass off for his family, as they all have special needs. I just want to say thank you for what you guys do. It's always fun to listen to you both. You have great chemistry and make me laugh every time I listen. I usually listen in the evening before I go to bed, or when I'm relaxing in the morning, I put my earbuds in and let the episodes play. My son Reese is 13 years old and diagnosed with an extremely rare genetic disorder, GLUT1 deficiency syndrome. He is one of 600 worldwide. His side effects are involuntary movements, and he has been delayed in everything since he was two. He's had every kind of therapy, speech, physical, and... OT since he was about two. What's OT?
Imagine the T stands for therapy, but I wouldn't know what the O stands for.
Well, I'm sorry. He goes on and wrote about how like insane this like whole journey has been with his son.
Sure. 1 in 600 people worldwide. Yeah. That's insane.
Yeah. Well, he talks about it took the doctors like 6 or 7 years just to diagnose him with that disorder.
Right.
That he was he's been tested for like 10 or 15 different things, and it always comes back as nope, he doesn't have that. And could you imagine like if that was, you know, I was thinking about like Amanda, like you go to get a test and she's like a year and a half old.
Right.
And she's having this thing happen to her, and they're like, we can't figure it out. Let's do another test.
Yep.
You know?
Well,
it's got to be so frustrating.
I mean, I can speak to this a little bit because my niece has the same general story, in that it got to the point where, and I can't. Not only would everyone be bored by it, but I couldn't remember the details of it to save my life. I don't totally understand all of it, but, you know, to the point where the things she's dealing with is so rare, which means just like was being described, I remember, I mean, My sweet little niece is 6 years old, and she has been studied and poked and prodded and, like, her whole life. You know what I mean? And it got to the where the NIH was paying for them to come up there and stay for and let them do testing because there's it's one of those things. I don't think it's as low as 600, but it's mm-hmm. some really rare stuff that they don't know a whole lot about and that they're trying to figure out. And all that to say, it's not my kid, but it is my niece. And mm-hmm. watching her continually go through that kind of stuff and not be able to live a normal life, quote unquote. You know, she's great and she's happy and she's strong and all those things, but it's just like, fuck, man, that's got to be a hard thing for a kid to deal with, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So all I'm saying is I can totally empathize with that story, and I hate hearing it, but.
Yeah. He goes on and says, anyway, there's more to the story and I'd gladly share our videos or you can YouTube them. Reese Jones Glut One story. There's also a video of my wife and I interviewed by the Glut One Foundation. I hope I'm saying that right. I wonder if it's glute.
I don't know.
Jones Family Glut One, if you're interested or any others are interested. I watched a video that I think his wife put together about 3 years ago. And dude, I was bawling because they were showing, the video was explaining and they were showing pictures, but then they showed like before treatment and after treatment pictures. Mm-hmm. And there's one of him with his older sister and they're like, he's in a wheelchair and the sister's like, they're walking along. And then they show the after one of them both walking. Mm. And then they did, the one that got me was he was playing baseball in a wheelchair. And then they did like the after and he like hits the ball and runs by himself.
Oh, you know? Man.
And I'm like watching this, you know, late last night when we were talking and I'm just like, oh, my God, I could not imagine if that was Amanda, you know, or my son, Shane. It's just like, whoa.
Yep.
But yeah, people should go and look that stuff up. Through all this, Reese has become quite the dude in many groups. They know me and my son very well, and they know my brother too. He started a group that tries to hook people up with posters they really want. But again, that's not why I'm writing. The reason I'm writing is that Reese is also a huge Pearl Jam fan. Through all of this, he's watched me interact with the Pearl Jam community and knows that I listen to their music all the time. One day, he asked me to play Faithful for him, and I gladly did. He actually started singing a bit, and of course, I had a giant smile on my face and even a tear, I'm sure. That was the beginning. From that point, he would always listen to Pearl Jam with me in the car. He would pick songs and learn them by heart. Since then, he's memorized many songs. He sung Alive, Last Kiss, and Red Mosquito in front of his class in chorus and other classes. He was mad he couldn't go with me to Seattle in 2018 to see the band. After Seattle, I told him, if they come to California locally, we are going. So, with the generosity of Given to Live, we are going as a family to see the band in Oakland. He's made a set list of 15 songs he hopes to hear. Given to Live will be taking Reese, myself, and my wife, all expenses paid, and they will be our personal assistant and take care of us in any way. We're also trying to set up a meet and greet, as there are many people who want to meet Reese and experience his first show. Once again, thank you for what you guys do. Keep it up. I think I just really wanted to get word out there about what our community does and what they're like, and to simply say thank you to all the wonderful Pearl Jam fans who continue to help us and make the world a better place. They've given me proof that there are still good, caring people out there. Let's keep it up, pay it forward, and ride the wave. Matthew Jones.
Now that's a good email, man. I mean, yeah, dude. Thanks for sharing that. And could you, pronunciation aside, could you spell it?
Reese?
No. The
Glut One?
Yeah. Is it GLUT?
It's, yeah, and then the number one.
Okay, cool. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, Glut One Deficiency Syndrome.
Man, thanks so much for sharing that.
Yeah, Given to Live. I'm sure we've mentioned them before, but Given to Live is a group that helps families with disabled kids like go to different shows, not just Pearl Jam, but all different, like what, like kind of like Make a Wish. Like, sure, if this kid wants to go see a band, this group Given to Live like helps them get there. It's a really, really great organization. So
yeah, go check them out.
People,
for sure.
People check them out too.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you. Thanks again, Matthew, for sharing that with us. Or Matt.
Yeah, man. Last email. It's from Tom.
This is an interesting...
He says, hi, dear Brads. Slightly different email this time. Just to show my appreciation for your pod, I recorded some random stuff, nerd stuff about Pearl Jam. Hope you like it. Kind regards, Tom Van Hamert. And Brad is... the big bad wolf is outside of his house and blowing his house down.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
I'm sure that the mic won't pick that up.
No. Mm-mm. Especially once I compress it. And, yeah.
There you go. It'll be great. Yeah, see? You know what you're doing. Oh, God. This is another, just so people know, like, once we get off the air, I am going to hear it. So, you know, I'm going to get, I mean, so I'm not in trouble. True.
God, there's that is so absolutely false.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Tom, man. He recorded us a message. Not just us, everybody. And I like his little intro.
It's an audio email. Yeah, I like this a lot.
It reminds me of the listener intro days.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of totally forgotten that we used to do that back in the day. So here we go.
Can I tell you a funny story real quick about that?
Sure.
Do you remember we recorded one for Metal Up Your Podcast?
No.
Oh, wow. Well, we did.
I mean, I'm not surprised, but yeah.
We did way back when. So I'm listening to the new current episode, and I hit play, and, you know, I skip over their little musical montage.
Right.
And it lands on, and this is what I hear, my own voice saying, and you're listening to, and for a split second, I thought, like, it was Single Podcast Theory was playing.
Right.
It was the weirdest, it was, like, such a weird thing.
That's funny.
Because then he started playing a song I've never heard before. It wasn't a Metallica song. It wasn't Pearl Jam. I'm like, what is happening to my podcast thing right now?
Or your brain.
So... Yeah, that too.
I'd be like, oh, that's it. I went crazy. It happened.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. So, anyway.
All right.
Tom.
Yeah. Nice random story. I love it. Had nothing to do with anything we're about to talk about. Here's Tom again. We'll try again now.
I'm so dead. Random star.
Hi, Brads. It's your buddy Tom van Hamert from Holland, the Netherlands. Slightly different email this time. First of all, I'd like to thank some of your listeners for their recommendations. When I visit Seattle next April, they've helped me with some things in the city, really about my grunge pilgrimage that I'm going to do. So I'd really like to thank them. It's really kind and it's really cool that things work out, you know. I ask a question, I got a few responses, so really, really nice. Thanks for that. Anyways, in this episode of
Random Stuff,
I wanted to talk about two things I find interesting about Ed's melody lines. And first off, have a listen to this. I've listened to tens of clips of the song being performed live, but only in 97 Ed sings it in this range, because ever since 98 he sings. I wonder if he even wanted to sing the high version in the studio. Second, listen to this very famous piece. Is that the question? I could only find one show, actually before 10 was released, where Eddie doesn't add this after, is that the question? decide the question. Oh, and if so, that whoa. I couldn't find one video or bootleg with him not doing it ever since. I wonder why it didn't make it to the record. Or when did he even start it? Very curious if you have any takes on that. Anyway, I know it's full-on nerdery, I know, but I never get tired of talking about my favorite band, Pearl Jam. Anyways, that's all for now, gentlemen, and kind regards from Tom Van Hamerd.
Tom, I like the nerdery, my friend. Yeah, that's an interesting... I think, personally, especially with the Alive clip that he played...
Mm-hmm.
When they first went in the studio, they were a brand new band, and it was a little bit before the record took off, which meant they were doing a lot of touring right after recording before 10 got really big. And I think that's when he kind of started really finding his voice in the band more. And I think that's where a lot of that stuff comes from. It just comes from the live show, and that's what the songs are now to them, because they're a live band. You know what I mean?
Right.
And yeah. what you heard in the studio, I mean, obviously 10 was produced quote unquote a little bit more than the rest of their records, or at least the next few when they got into Verses and Vitology and all that good stuff. But you think of it as like those vocals were what came out of just early rehearsals and the basic songwriting, and everything after that was probably the more fleshed out reactions to how they play it live, if that makes any sense.
Right. Yeah, these songs just evolve over time. It's kind of like we were talking a few weeks ago about the Alive demo. You know, and you listen to the demo version versus the recorded version versus a live version 10 years later, there's going to be little cool differences thrown in there.
Yeah. And I can say, I mean, if a dummy like me has done something like this in the studio, it wouldn't be a huge surprise for it to be something Eddie might think about or notice too. Maybe not. Maybe he just doesn't think at all about stuff, and that's why, you know what I mean, like we're mm-hmm. thinking about it way more than he ever has. But I know, right. I've been in moments in the studio where, especially if it's a song that I wrote and then did live at least a few times before I went in to record it, and you start realizing that some of the vocals in those contexts just come out a little bit differently. Like I might do some sort of like interval, not run like Mariah Carey run, but like embellish a melody more live because of the way it feels live when you get to maybe that verse, or in this case it's a end of a chorus or end of a verse into a chorus, and I've actually done like I like that vocal and it feels good live, but not on the, that's a live thing, that's not how it should be recorded.
Mm-hmm.
I need the structure to be there. I need to be the guts of the song needs to be there for the recording, and then that's how I can kind of embellish it live. You know, I don't know.
Right.
I've made decisions like that.
Could it be like the way that it's being played live? He needs that whoa as a something to bridge the gap.
Yeah.
Just between the two. I don't know. Like, if he doesn't say whoa, there's kind of a empty beat in there. And maybe that was, like, throwing him off?
I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't think that it throws him off. But they play things faster live.
Mm-hmm.
They play with a little bit more energy, especially some of the songs off 10. You know, the energy of a lot of the 10 songs live are just different than the record. You know what I mean? Like,
right,
that record is special in part because it was a time capsule for them. You know what I mean? No other Pearl Jam record sounds like 10, I don't think.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's the... I love the record, but to me, that's... When you look at their whole catalog, I feel like it's the outlier in a weird way. But...
Yeah.
I think part of it is just it's an energy thing. Yeah, the tempo is a lot slower in the record version. You also have to keep in mind, too, that 10 wasn't recorded in the same fashion. I think definitely like Basics and everything were tracked together, like in the same room, I would imagine. I don't know. Maybe they did it piece by piece. But you also have to remember, like, it wouldn't surprise me either way whether maybe he did that while recording and the producer and mixer decided to go with a different take that didn't have that whoa in it. I don't know. There's a million reasons why it could be, but it is nerdy and fun to try and imagine what was actually going on, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we just got too nerdy.
I think so. We spent 10 minutes on whoa.
Yeah. Let's see here.
But I love it.
Lots of editing in this episode, I think. No. Thanks so much, Tom. Love that. Appreciate it. All right, Live at Easy Street. This is 2006, correct?
Yes.
You got any basic facts or anything, or you just want to listen to this shit?
This is a pretty cool how this all happened. So this was April 29th. This was 2005, Brad Lyons, not 06.
Oh, I thought it was 06. Yeah,
I don't know. Yeah, no, I was thinking it was released.
In 2006.
I was thinking the same thing. So there was in 2005, Easy Street Records, which is a record store in Seattle, if people don't know, was like chosen to be the
kind of the, is it like the ambassador store for that year or something?
Well, there was, yeah, and there was a, the Coalition of Independent Music Stores were having their, like, 10-year anniversary meeting in Seattle. And Easy Street was, like, the, I don't know what word I'm trying to think of. They were hosting this thing. And so Pearl Jam was like, we need to do something for these people. And so they had a... They had a show at the record store, tiny little place, but nobody knew about it. And all the people that were, the only way you could get in is if you were a member of this Coalition of Independent Music Stores, which is basically indie record store owners.
Right.
And so they put them on a bus and said they're going to a work party. And they showed up and the work party was at Easy Street and Pearl Jam walked out on this little tiny stage in the back of the record store.
Hell yeah, they did.
And played. And it's pretty amazing.
And I bet they loved it, too.
Oh, yeah.
I bet they miss playing little tiny shitty rooms like that. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not.
It's pretty cool. There's pictures from this show online that you can find. And it's... I mean, it's tiny. It's so tiny.
Right.
You know, it's a record store. It's really cool. But anyway, they played like not a full Pearl Jam show, but they played 16 songs.
It's pretty incredible.
I only found that out like in researching for today's episode. I thought the EP, the record that's available, is what the show was.
Me too. I thought the same thing. What I found even more interesting, we talked about this before we started recording, but there's also, if you go to the Wikipedia page for Live at Easy Street, it shows a complete list of songs that they soundchecked with. And it even marks out where it's just like, oh, they only played the riffs from these songs. They played this song a couple times. What's funny about it to me is that, you know, this wasn't part of a tour. This wasn't necessarily this. I mean, this is a small, unannounced record store show, and not only did they play 16 songs, not the 7 or 8 or whatever that's on the track listing of the actual release, but they played all they played Whipping for the sound check, which was just kind of like, whose call was that? I find that kind of stuff, it's kind of like Tom's nerd stuff. That's interesting to me. Why did you play Break or Fall twice and not play it in the show?
At the show, right.
The only Soundcheck songs, just at a quick glance, that made it to the show were Sad. Looks like they probably did the covers, right?
New World.
New World, yeah.
Just New World, which is only one
right.
out of three covers that they played that night.
They played Elderly Woman.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see here. What about I Got You?
And Corduroy.
Corduroy, yeah.
They did play Corduroy. Yeah. Well, they played something called Crapshoot, which is the demo version of Comatose, which wasn't going to come out for another year.
Right.
This set list is nuts.
It is,
for the
man.
Whole thing. I mean, they played Sad.
Yeah, since we won't be listening to the original set list, you know, as far as what actually got released, this is what they played. So they opened with Half Full, and then Corduroy, and then Lucan, and then American and Me, State of Love and Trust, into Down, into Sad, into Elderly Woman, into Crapshoot, which is the Comatose. Spin the Black Circle, Even Flow, Save You, Bleed for Me, The New World, Thuckin' Up, and Porch. So that was what the people that were there that day, that's what they got to see.
Yeah. Pretty insane set list.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, three covers, a new song, you know, Comatose. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, I'm pretty sure I've stated my feelings about, like, music critics and music reviewers.
Right.
And whatever. Anyway, I won't go into that. But one of the ones that I do like to read is David Frick. I'm not saying he's perfect, but I usually come away from the things he writes with something to think about, at least, you know? And it's just from the Wikipedia page, but he wrote in Rolling Stone that he gave it 3.5 stars, which is a pretty good rating. And, I mean, he doesn't give out 5 stars a whole lot. You know what I mean? It says, here's a good reason why cool brick-and-mortar record shops still matter. 7 songs, cut live and hot in front of fans and customers at Easy Street Records in Pearl Jam's hometown of Seattle, then released through indie stores and priced to move.
Very cool.
Yeah.
It does. Yeah, because what he's talking about is the vinyl was released for Record Store Day the next year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's I think one of the reasons why vinyl is sticking around, at least for a while, and has even made a resurgence, is that that's the space that people like me and you and probably a lot of listeners to this podcast, it's not about, I miss the good old days. It's just that, you know, I've lived through so many different forms of consumption and delivery methods for music. You know, we were born in this weird time where I remember vinyl as a very young kid, you know, the leftover collections from like my dad or an uncle or, you know, something like that. So it was a part of my life from the very beginning. And then we moved into cassettes, and I totally did that thing. And then I totally did CDs. And then I totally did the MP3 iTunes kind of thing. And I still find myself wanting to go back to a record store and just be able to walk around. And there's probably something playing that maybe I haven't heard before. It's the total high fidelity vibe. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that still works for a lot of people that got to experience all of it, but also for these quote unquote kids that aren't that much younger than you and I, to be honest with you, that missed vinyl completely. And it's only been through the resurgence of it and bands like Pearl Jam doing things like this, being so involved in Record Store Day. And I live in a city that has a kick ass record store called Seasick Records. And I know I love Record Store Day because of that record store in my town. I love that I can go in there and get, you know, Unplugged on vinyl in my hometown record store. and check out what other record store releases are out there and the people are interested in. Online has its place, and that's amazing, but I still feel like the whole record store experience is representative of something that we're realizing by going through this technological, social, everyone's connected boom. And I kind of feel like part of that experience is, I don't know, us kind of saying, I do like being around people and experiencing music with other people and not just alone in front of my computer screen.
Yeah.
You know, same with live music.
For me, it's like the physicality of going into a record store and flipping through these gigantic records compared to CDs and tapes. And just the way they kind of flip. I mean, just like I said, the physicality of standing there and flipping through each one, and they're so big.
Right.
And the artwork is so big on the sleeve. You know, that's always been like my love of records and record stores.
Yeah, and it's the physical thing too for people like myself that I didn't realize growing up with the mediums that I grew up with I knew it, but until it was quote unquote kind of taken away, how much the artwork affected my relationship to a record. Because you still got liner notes and booklets and whatever you want to call it with CDs and cassette tapes, as well, obviously with vinyl. But to be able to go home and especially with a band like Pearl Jam and take out my No Code or whatever it is, and just the packaging for these things, the art involved in it and the concepts involved in it are so intertwined with the music that's on that record. It's just like, well, vinyl is the best way. If you like that experience, it just seems to be the best way to consume it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. We could go on about that, or I could much longer. But let's start listening, man.
Yeah, nice, we'll listen to it.
2006. Drop the needle. Yeah, dude. Here we go.
That's Eddie walking across the street into the record store.
Yep.
Mike fucking McCready.
Yeah, out of the fucking gate, dude.
Yes, you get Mike.
And, I mean, fuck, listen to Eddie, dude.
Yeah.
This is definitely a song that I never hated. It was nothing like that, but I did not spend a lot of time with this song before doing this podcast, and it has grown on me a ton.
Really?
Yeah. I was never that interested in the song for whatever reason, but, and I'm not saying it's, you know, in my top 10 or some shit, but I love listening to it now.
Yeah. It's definitely had to grow on me.
Yeah,
But this is a cool version of it.
Hell yeah! Opening with it.
Oh yeah. This is definitely too like a song that I way more enjoy hearing it live than the record version.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's kind of like an immediacy to it, and Eddie's voice is so raw.
Right. This is like Pearl Jam, you know, 1.0 almost. You listen to mm-hmm. Mike, you listen to the whole band, it's like, maybe not the whole band, but it's pretty representative of kind of their early shit, you know?
Places, all the times we've played umpteen times in Seattle, this is the first time we played West Seattle.
West Side!
The neighborhood, and this next song was actually written about not just a house, but a certain kitchen.
Hell
right
yeah.
Up the street. This song's called Lucan.
That would have been so badass. I mean, the original said yes. It was song number 3.
Yeah.
This also goes to show you how they do construct set lists methodically, in the sense that when they're going to play a 3-hour show, man, they're going to open with the slow burns. They're going to warm mm-hmm. up. They're going to kind of, it's like we've right. got time tonight. But it seems like any time that they have a short and sweet set like this, they tend to just fucking go balls out from the beginning.
Yeah.
You know?
You need to. In that setting.
Yeah. He doesn't have a show the next day.
Right.
You know what I mean? Right. If he has yeah. to, he doesn't have to sing the next day. If he has to blow it out right. a little bit, he can fucking do it. He doesn't have to worry about night 2 in some city, you know, for another 3-hour set. Well, and then, of course, it's a little bit of political Pearl Jam. If you think back on it, this is during Bush's second term, right?
Yeah.
2005?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like how...
And this is a...
Go ahead, sorry.
was going to say, this is a song called American in Me from a band called The Avengers, punk band in the late 70s.
Yeah. They sound good, man.
Yeah. I would love to hear them bring this back out.
Yeah. I'm surprised they haven't, actually. Maybe in the next tour.
We might get it.
Hell yeah.
Fun song, fun cover.
In To Save You.
In To Save You.
Different flavor here.
Yeah. I gotta say though too, like even if this was the only seven songs that they played that night, it's pretty kick-ass.
Oh hell yeah!
Short, sweet set list.
Yep.
You know,
absolutely.
So that's like one reason I love this EP is that it's. I could see this being, you know, we're in a record store. It's tiny. We're just gonna play six or seven songs.
Right.
And this is it.
And they're playing like they're playing to 20,000 people.
Exactly.
Talked about tempos before a lot on this 100 so episodes we've done, and
right,
this is one that I like the faster live version a lot better than the recorded version. In some ways the recorded version, because of the tempo, now I realize why it didn't make sense to me, but the chorus bums me out in the recorded version. But here, it makes more sense because it's faster and it feels like more of like a punky chorus. Just literally, like, there's not a lot of melody to it. It's just, fuck you, fuck me, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And it just feels right live to me rather than the recorded version.
Bleed for me.
This is a Dead Kennedys cover.
I went through a little Dead Kennedys phase when I was younger.
Yeah. I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I get it.
I thought the name was so insanely vulgar, you know? And I was kind of like a, you know, a goody two shoes.
You thought Catholic the Dead boy. Kennedys was vulgar?
The name, that name.
Right. Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I never thought of it like that.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. It's just so, like, blatantly...
I guess I'm just a big asshole, like, Brad.
Yes, you are.
God damn, his voice sounds good, man.
Yeah. This song takes a turn.
Yeah, it does.
It's pretty cool.
That's a good cover.
Yeah, I wonder how many times they played that.
Yeah, I was just thinking
we were going to play this next song. Regardless of the fact that we get to play it with him and he's here, it's a real honor not just to play for him, but to play with him. Welcome to the stage, Mr. John Doe. So this is a song by, I'm assuming it's X?
Yeah, I would assume. I don't know if, yeah. It's John Doe from X, but.
Yeah.
They're a LA punk band.
Mm-hmm.
It's just interesting that he came up and did this style of a song. It's almost like some sort of like a mashup of like rockabilly and.
Yeah, but wasn't X more. They weren't like punk, like
right.
Rollins Band or Dead Kennedys, not Rollins Band, but Black Flag.
Yeah, for me, it's just it's more about like what gets labeled genre wise as
yeah,
what.
It's weird,
it's weird
it?
Sometimes, you know.
It's interesting if you look at the lyrics for all three of these covers, they're very politically charged.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, which is not, you know, that's not abnormal for Pearl Jam, but it's interesting that these are three covers that are not, you know, it's not Rockin' in the Free World.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
or,
sure.
Or I'm okay, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Or it's okay. They're right. Pretty, but again, I think you mentioned earlier, this was right 4 or 5 months. This was probably 2 months after Bush was inaugurated. So pretty charged time for the band.
Right. So different now. I mean, just, I don't know. You think about, no matter what side you're on, quote unquote, you think about the Bush years and it's just like, oh, things are so fucking radically different, and that wasn't all that long ago, you know?
Yeah.
Pearl motherfucking jam. Jam.
They played, in the original set list, they played Fucking Up, the Neil Young cover.
Yeah.
And then they went into Porch. If there was one song I'd want to hear from that original set list to be Fucking Up. I love that song so much.
Right. What the fuck is this? I'd like to hear that early version of Comatose, though. See if it's how different it is. Lyrics are different, or arrangement, or what?
Yeah, it's interesting because I couldn't find any of this stuff like on YouTube.
Yeah, I bet they have this locked down pretty tight.
I guess so.
Just know the recordings exist.
Yeah,
they recorded the whole. They record everything. I bet the sound check they still have.
Right. Yeah. The vault.
Yeah.
Take a good
goddamn, listen to Matt and Jeff, man. They just flipped that rhythm section around.
I was just thinking it's kind of a different version than we're used to hearing. But it sounds amazing.
I fucking love it. I love that they're so good at, I mean, they're good at just kind of letting it rip and letting just mic go. But I love that they do these weird dynamic, like they get down low and quiet again and kind of vamp on something and then work their way back into it. I love those. I learned a lot about dynamics from all those years as a teenager being in bands that played cover, like Pearl Jam covers all the time, you know?
Right.
Definitely, I can look back and see how much they informed how I, what I do in those kind of situations. I can hear how much of it on drums and on lead guitar, how much I took directly from all those hours of listening to Pearl Jam.
Right. The boots.
Yeah.
Listening to different boots.
Yeah. That was a good show, man.
Really cool. It sounds amazing.
Yeah, for sure. I hope at some point they release the whole thing or I don't know.
It would have been cool if they had put out, you know, like a video of even like Evenflow or Save You. Even, you know, in Pearl Jam fashion, it'd be cool if they put out a video of a song that's not on the EP, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
But I would love to see any footage of this show.
For sure. Maybe it'll sneak out there one day.
I hope so.
This is before everyone had camera phone video capability on their phones. Or you could do it, but it was just like so like Minecraft 8-bit pixelated shitty video.
Yeah. Remember when like, oh, how many megapixels is your camera? Was like a thing.
Right. Yeah.
Like I think mine's like 12. Oh my God. My old one was 8.
Now that isn't like now the iPhones have like 15 cameras on them and they're all different, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Right.
It's, you know, I don't know. It's almost like, I mean, there's definitely a reason to have like real proper professional cameras and stuff. But at some point, you know, I don't know. Technology is just getting real good.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, let's get out of here, dude.
I don't know. I like the old technology.
Yeah.
Like iPods.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I can't believe you have an iPod Classic. I love it so much.
I'm so surprised that how surprised you are that I still use it.
But you got to remember, I worked for Apple for 5 years.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was, I'm not anymore, but I was pretty up on, I was pretty up to date on technology at that time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I was way more interested in it. And I don't know. It was kind of, because I worked for Apple from 2008 to 13, I think.
Right.
Things hadn't gotten so balls out crazy.
Yeah.
I kind of got out of the right time.
I definitely love the, like, Apple Music. Like, 99.9% of every song I can think of is on there. I can listen to anything.
Sure.
You know, it's insane. But I do like having the iPod with a bunch of stuff on it for when I'm out of a signal area.
I love that that's your reasoning for having it, too.
It still comes in handy.
Because not only are you living and loving your antiquated technology, but you also live in a place where it's hard to get cell phone service.
That's true.
It's amazing. It's like, who lives like that anymore?
Yeah, right. I put my hand up.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll have deliveries, and I'm like, well, I'm going to have to pull the old iPod out for this one.
I'm going in even further into the recesses of Tennessee than I already am.
Exactly. Or I furiously start downloading stuff to my phone before I hit, you know, that barrier.
Get as much out of that data as you can before it leaves.
Exactly.
Well, that was fun. It was a good show.
That's a really cool show.
Thanks for the idea, Mr. Remington. Appreciate it. All right, let's get out of here. If you want to email us, the email address is singlepodcasttheory@gmail.com. We are on social media, and if you would like to support the show financially, you can go to patreon.com, patreon.com/singlepodcasttheory. Until next week, I'm Brad Lyons.
And I'm Brad Blazek, saying it was better before they voted for what's-his-name. This was supposed to be the new world.
nice pick.
Yeah. Timer.
I died and you just stood up. I died and you watched me. I died and you walked by and said, no, I'm dead.
I was high.